Mrs. Sam Harris came to Kingsville from Longview, Texas in 1948. Sam was employed by the Kingsville Independent School District to teach history and government and served as football coach. He had a bachelor's degree from Bishop College, Marshall, Texas, master's degree in science from A&I College. He was the first Negro to receive a master's from A&I. Harris was promoted to principal at the Frederick Douglass School, succeeding Mr. Ernest Fox. After integration came, he remained principal. Later, Douglass built a new school on West Johnston Avenue, and the name changed to N.M. Harrell Elementary. He remained principal until retirement in 1979. His 10 years of service was 31 years. Harris was involved in civic affairs. Boy Scout Troop number 95. He was Scoutmaster for 25 years. He served on numerous county boards. Was wishful master of Bayview Lodge number 46. He was also a deacon of Kingsville Baptist Church. Now keep on my part.
Yes.
Okay.
You're doing well.
Mrs. Harris, Irene, came to Kingsville in 1948. She began her teaching career in East Texas, Longview and Marshall. She was employed by the Kingsville Independent School District to teach third grade at the Douglass Elementary School. After integration, she was transferred to the Coastman Elementary School, Kingsville, and remained there until retirement in 1974. Her 10-year service was 33 years. She had a bachelor and master's degree from Bishop College in Marshall, Texas. The Harrises loved children and was always involved in their success and progress.
That's great. Okay. Well, what I'd like to do now is to for you to get comfortable, and I'd like to ask you some more questions. Okay? All righty.
Wait just a minute. Let's go.
Okay. All righty. What I'd like to do is just go back and get a little biographical information on you. What year were you born?
Oh, 1918.
In Marshall, Texas?
Tatum, Texas.
Tatum.
Where is it? Real proud Longview. Uh-huh. A little real town. Mm-hmm. Longview.
Mm-hmm. You guys arrived here in Kingsville in 1948.
Yes.
Can you describe for me what Kingsville was like in 1948 when you and your husband
came in 1948? We came as teachers and my husband's principal. And we met a lovely group of people. The profession was railroad tie. I mean, the profession, he was working on railroad, mm-hmm. and was on inspection. And Texas was all Negro breaking, mm-hmm. because in the will from the Cane Ranch, it was in her will that all Negroes be on the railroad in Michigan on lunch. Mm-hmm. And we really enjoyed the relationship here among the races. Mm-hmm. And it was always good, and we were always including things. And even when integration came by, we never had any trouble because the relationship obviously. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned Mrs. King and her commitment to hire blacks on the railroad as mm-hmm. brakemen. Was the community, was it reflected in the school that this town had, in terms of the black community, mm-hmm. had a strong economic base? Were the children that you taught, was it reflected in the school?
Well,
the affluence.
Well, the educational status, I would say, it was average, I guess, because you had more uneducated parents than it would be. We had more uneducated parents. Mm-hmm. And after, I say, after Booba teachers came, and they had a Negro school. And they became interested in the children advanced, because the parents got interested in, because the teacher was interested, we just got involved, period. And turned out a whole lot of good students when it came to integration. We always had students that place where they supposed to be and one behind, all like that. Although the educational status might have been just quite up to par, the contact and the economic status and everything has brought everything up on the right level, because they had the money to do so, and all we had to do was say, well, John needed this, and everything's moved.
So it was obvious through the status of the parents in the community that those children that attended Frederick Douglass had the necessary supplies. They had the money for field trips and et cetera, in order to
advance those kids. I said, all to advance answers. They had, you know, the cushion where they taking the money and the know-how. And the parents that wanted this kid, it was so honored and nice and wanted the kids to do and learn until they get advanced.
What, in 1948, when you first got here, did you have any real strong feelings about the community one way or the other? Just anything that stood out?
No, nothing in particular, I don't think, because I've always been a very, very good mixer, and I did never feel isolated, and even with the I said, not I'm not saying poor. Me, either literate that didn't know how to know A from a B. I was so interested in him and an underdog. And because he didn't have a chance, I wanted to help him for. Because I never will forget, we had to take his feather shoe week. And I would always let my kids take a demonstration, so I let some of the Latin boy take Texas. I mean, Six Flags and the big, you know, the big cities of Texas, so close, and when he'd get there, where he couldn't take it, I'd take over and something. I'd his daddy say, I'm so glad that my son learned that. Because when I was going to school, I did. And everything like that. So I just always felt a part of the community and everybody, especially the child involved.
Yes. Can you reminisce a little bit for us about the teachers that served the community at Douglass when you first got there?
Now, when I first started work, I believe I worked a year or so under Mr. Fox. Some husband came as coach and so forth. And he was, you know, promoted to principal after Fox left. And so they gave me Mrs. Fox's job. See, she transferred to another school. And they gave me Mrs. Fox's job. And our relationship among the teachers was real, real good. And Mrs. Andrews at fourth grade, Miss Summers second, Mrs. Wright. One time had first after Miss Batman left. But we even had a little faculty within our own group where we would go and discuss things and problems and so forth. That, you know, every 6 weeks or so forth, we'd have a big comment after it. But we always had a little group that we could go to for advice and help. And I always made my children feel that we could talk about anything, whatever. And so I have had kids to come in the door after I was in a grade school with the fishbowl up, the fight. And I said, well, what's wrong with you? And then he would relate his home problem and his, you know, and I tried to talk to him. And I had another father come in, and his mother and dad separated. And so he had to stay and keep the little one. And that made him have a different attitude toward life. So he was coming late, and he would be withdrawn. And so I kept him even to the next his problem. And then he told me. And took it over to the principal. And I was telling him that, what he had to do and so forth. And he came late, and so the children, I would say, well, why does he have to come? How can he come at 12? We have to come late. And I told her that was kind of private. And so the principal told me, he said, if you can't come at 8, you let him come when he can. Mm-hmm. Then if he gets 3 hours, it's been a while. And so after he began to come, I spent two or three hours. Mm-hmm. Then he began to come a little early, And he became a little more relaxed. Mm-hmm. And he was a good student, so he just calmed down, come on, like that. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember, he was Miller Trevino. And the other one that always wanted to fight was Miguel Madrona. You want the name?
Sure. Sure. Won't hurt anything. It was a student that would always fight. It was a student that would always fight.
Oh, he would always fight, but he was always mad at just wanting to fight. Mm-hmm. And, we're coming in with fish ball, and nobody couldn't say hello to him, anything like that, Mm-hmm. I just put Miguel Madrona in. And I forgot those shoes I've been for. Mm-hmm. I've been retired going in 16 years.
16?
Yeah.
My goodness, I didn't realize it had been that long.
Now I'm not what this Madrona said. You mean D-R-A, that's Madrona. Mm-hmm. Miguel Madrona. You don't know that should be.
And in what school was this?
At the Coast of the Elements.
At Coast.
That's what I'm saying. I put Coast of the Elements. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you were able to break through with this child?
Mm-hmm. I never broke it ever across like that to you. I never really had a problem I could have. Mm-hmm. Because I couldn't handle your problem like I could. My problem is when you sit down and really talk things over and find things out to the nutty and nitty gritty, you can never help anybody. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I was able to. I sat down and I found out about their home life, their families. And one or two times I did a survey here in the Negro area. Mm-hmm. And told me to listen. Mm-hmm. Because his daughter wasn't done it. She was fooling my papa, so he came out there to find out. And so once I went in to find out, I did a survey. You took the parents' name, the kids' name, and the age, and the success and progress. And that brought her out of there too, because she wasn't done it.
And that survey was able to help you programming
it,
for the...
Yes, it always helps the teacher, too. Mm-hmm. It helps you, too. Mm-hmm.
Is the family the most important link between school and a child's education? Is the family most important link?
Now, that's the key word in it. The family is the connection link. Mm-hmm. That's right. And I think that's been here so many problems in education now, because it's really, they say it's the school, but it's really not the school. Mm-hmm. They blame it on the school. Mm-hmm. But you can't blame it on the school. Mm-hmm. Because I read one fellow, a lady was out on luncheon, and it was psychologists, sociologists, and physicists and everything there. Mm-hmm. And she wanted to ask a question to the psychologist, and she waited at lunch. Now, they were half through lunch, and whatever the name was, the professor's name. She told him the age of her little girl. She was preschooler. Mm-hmm. And she said, I want to know when she's going to start reading and so forth. Mm-hmm. And he told her, say, you there and eat your soup. She was 2 years old. Mm-hmm. Said, you're just 2 years too late. Now, some people think a child is 4 and 5 to 6. Mm-hmm. Well, he's only, he said, Dad, that's his reading. Mm-hmm. All he does is put it in Santa's form. Mm-hmm. And it's written form. Because words are separated and they book all like that. That's his vocabulary. Mm-hmm. And if he goes to school with a broad vocabulary and a good background of learning and that contact and everything, he'll say, you can tell, you can just pick them out, you can do. Mm-hmm. and get me stale. And it doesn't mean fine home and fine cars and fine clothes. Sometimes responsibility, just a little push, have enough internal to get somebody to help you. That's what my parents did. My dad and mother went to the third grade, but they always pushed us because they knew the puzzle. That could help us out. That's what really makes us try to take. Let me finish this now.
Okay.
Give a comment on everything. Thank you.
While you're writing there, I'd like to ask you another question. Was it difficult teaching in a school where your husband was the principal? Were there ever any problems?
I didn't have any problems because I had always heard the principal wife talk so much about the teachers always had to get the principal. The principal wife would have a say of just that she was the principal. And I'd always say that if I had ever worked at the school with my husband with, I would always take it over and let everybody else get what they needed and then was in and left. I would always take it. I'd always done that. Because some principal wife really use that position. And they go in first and get everything they want and anything else left than you did. But I said I would never do that. Because I had told the principal wife, to the principal and his wife, and it, that it's been unloosed. I had done that.
And the teachers, the other teachers there at the school, respected you for your position in terms of that that role. Let me ask you, when Mr. Harris retired from the school district, there was a move to try and get this new school named after him. Were there problems with that initially?
Well, I don't think it was really a follow-up on what they wanted. You know, like they started, you know, but they didn't follow up enough on it to let them know they were interested. You know how you start a project and say, well, I know they're going to do something else. You know, get involved enough to contact enough people to get them in. So I think that was really lost. And then, you know, when they moved and they built a new facility, they wanted to transfer the Douglas name. That would have been fair with Douglas. But some hook and a crook, they didn't want the slave's name on there.
Someone outside of the community or a black?
Why the whites didn't want it on there. The whites didn't want the name because their name is after Mr. Harrow. He was president of the military. But the Negroes had talked about letting the name remain as it was. But I don't think it was a follow-up. There was some talk about it, but it wasn't a follow-up. And I guess if it had been, if they had followed up, it might have been, you know, they might have wouldn't named it after it.
Was Mr. Harris disappointed in that decision?
But it didn't change the name. No, I don't think so much, but you know what they tried to do. They tried to change him from there.
Move Mr. Harris from Harris.
They wanted to put him at another school.
Why?
Yeah. And but they, it was the whites who really stood up here against that. And I remember when they used to take the Boy Scouts on Saturday by these homes, the white woman was seeing. And so someone had told them that the superintendent was trying to put Sam at another school as principal in Maine. A white principal over here to the new school. And so they got in the wind of it and said, well, if he needed them to vote or whatever, that he was going to be principal of Harrow. Because they thought any promotion or any good thing that he deserved it. Because they had noticed that he came by there. Every side of going with the Boy Scouts with no pay and so forth. It was so interesting to it. And that would never happen. And that's the only reason they were.
What, did you guys ever catch wind of why they wanted him moved?
Why they wanted him moved?
Yes.
Well, we thought it was such a fine facility. Things were good when the mobiles, they built Tower. They built a new one, the Astrodome Concern, just like this one, a duplicate. And they had a white principal there. And so we were just of the opinion that since you're a principal, you don't care where you teach, that this is just a little too knifey. That's what we see it now. That was the only country. You know, he had a good relationship with the people. He had he was a lovely person to work with because he was the administrator of the year here, too. I can tell that. He was school administrator of the year over every other principal and everything here. White Elder and everything. And his student teachers, his distant teachers, his school nurses, those coming to the school, they voted for him because they claimed whatever that problem was, he always listened. And when he left Harvard, one teacher cried and said, out of all the places she'd been, and all the schools she taught, she had never had a principal that actually helped her with lesson work. Come in if you have a problem. He did that because he used to be a lesson teacher. But no sense of how on the hard game. Administration, I don't know, and half of them don't even know what's going on. You know that. I have a stepsister in Tatum. She said when they come in so high on the hog, so foot, she'd have some tests. She just keep a book up, and she just give them to the feel they want to. But at least, that's the reason now they require a principal to know a little elementary education. Now you understand the problem in elementary school if you don't know. And so now he had to know a little about elementary education all years ago. And so she said she always kept a book of tests ready. They come and ask me, why are they doing it? She's playing That's the idea of about that what I did. My supervisor's coming to my room, whatever, if I was talking about the globe, whatever, I would ask and suggest, and I'd tell the kids, this is so-and-so, maybe she had customers, and most times it would come to me. Then Mr. Harvey, Superintendent A.D. Harvey.
I've heard the name.
But he was so lovely, and he'd come in the room. We would just turn everything over him. He loved children. Children would live on his shoulder. Said, Mr. Harvey, you're fine in the FWC. He was an educator for them. I had been to his house to a luncheon. And when he get through, he would take down, I'd give every teacher a plan and a book. And you know, when you're like that, just like you make it take your thing. You gave me so much confidence until I did. But I didn't know I could do, because I have never done it. That's history. Now that's history. You did. Now somebody else, I don't think I could have done.
Well, good.
I told Miss Calvin, I say, after I had throat surgery three times, anything of putting me under pressure that I don't think I'm going to be able to master. And so last night, I had some little pimples, but I was because my nose was just stressed. It's stressed because my nose is really red, man. So I was just thinking about I may not be able to do what I wanted to. You know what I mean? And so you gave me constipation.
Great. Well, let me ask you this. Did the children at Douglas have any role models? Did they have any heroes during that time? We're talking about a very volatile time, 1948, early 50s, mid-50s. And if so, can you remember any of the kids' idols, heroes?
Well, around that time, I know they had a championship, football and basketball. I know that. Because when Ms. Harris came, they had never had a football team. And they won so many games. And see, I think Gerald Otis, Haley, and Oscar, and the Watson. And they had a championship basketball team. And so let me see some of the... someone in that homemaking apartment used to excel. And I just can't get any people with that. I'm trying to think what girls were wrong with that. Let's see, Darlene Scott. And I am, and all them came kind of after them. Those is the one I touched.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those that were a little older, mm-hmm. when I came, they were already above the third grade seat.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Darlene, who's she? I don't know. Now, the baby girl is in Hollywood, you know that, don't you?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Doing really well.
Uh-huh.
Kim Scott.
Somebody else. Well, Butch was, he excelled. He was a, he worked at ROTC.
Mm-hmm.
And I see somebody else. Just offhand that I was trying to think. But And back to about this being a railroad section,
mm-hmm.
where they had money. Because a deal appeared to go and get degrees and be successful, they wouldn't be able to go out of town anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And then after they threw a requirement on the brakeman, you know, the other 40 years ago, they didn't have to have much education.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, you had to have a high school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And many of our students got the high school diploma. Went right on the end, I come right back and went to the railroad as an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And we had an Alpha Cowboy and all of them did that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Shelton boy and I think the Frazier boy.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a push in the money and the endless and the foundation as well.
Mm-hmm. So the money that was provided through the railroad helped really these children and families send their children on to colleges.
Sure. And I don't care how great your society and thing you want to do, you're going to have the money to push it. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that if the parents hadn't had money, I don't care what you hope, if you don't have a little cash, especially, you have to have a little bit, you know, even to get government grants and things, you have to have a little bit of money your own.
Mm-hmm. Were there many opportunities here for the children that graduated from high school and that were bright? Or did they have to leave in order to further their goals? And
well, but then they went to ANI.
Mm-hmm.
They had a little employment here in town and so forth. Then they got grants.
Mm-hmm.
And then some with the other towns to teach, and some, you know, remain in Kingsville. I don't think of it in anything that in particular they had to do, you know. And then had some families here that daddy went on the railroad, everyone went on the railroad. But I remember the Wilson family, and Daddy Wilson's mother.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think their dad was a railroad man. If he was, I said he left.
Mm-hmm.
Kingsville when I first came, but I don't think it was real, man.
Mm-hmm.
And so those that came and weren't on the railroad and had this little new job, they struggled. They sent their boys and girls just like the native children because they were interested in them, you know.
Mm-hmm. 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 Some of the kids that come to mind that left Douglas and went on to Memorial and King High and left Kingsville and have made it successful, or who?
Darlene Scott. Well, Jean is not. Jean James is still here in Kingsville.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she teaches at the college. Miss Carolina. Why is Jean from North Carolina?
Atlanta, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what that big college.
She teaching at
she's up there every summer now.
Mm-hmm.
And let me see now. Who else? I'm gonna get somebody with it, but Lois Carroll is still here.
Mm-hmm.
And Clarice is teaching here.
Mm-hmm.
And Madeline's teaching here. Let me see now somebody. I was gonna think way back there when I first went. Oh yeah, Mr. Bowman's son is
Chester Jr.
But he finished college, I know. Mm-hmm. Chester Jr. Mm-hmm.
He
finished in Denver. You know Mr. Bowman was dead.
Yes.
Oh, she keeps me loose.
Yes.
Yeah. That is the only way to thank somebody for the thousand and oh, yeah, the Calhoun, Edward, Calvin, Hazel. I had one of Calvin and Edward's car once in my foot. He was with Miss Calhoun. Now I'm talking about the new needs.
Oh, you're doing well. Well, see, we're getting it all on tape here. And what we have a. We have a transcriber that will be transcribing all of this material into print.
I didn't know what I was saying. You was taking on tape.
Yes, you did well. You did well. And all of it, but let us keep that. I'd like to hold on to your manuscript there as well.
I'd like to write all over real nice and see what you get.
Okay.
I didn't hear Miss Campbell. You get from her because I'm going the way tomorrow.
Okay.
And so I write everything up, the first one and this one, everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then leave it and get it.
All right. Great.
I know you were asking questions. I may be trying to polish up the blood. But I hope it's like I'm not right.
Let me ask you, during the early 50s, did you know that you were in the black community? If you traveling down in the community, was it visible to be the black community? Was it obvious?
Well,
a lot of people say.
I don't say it was a problem because it never was really a problem. Because first of all, you didn't have too many blacks here. Mm-hmm. And so we always had a whole deal of privileges and things that we enjoyed that the other communities of East and where I had lived didn't.
Mm-hmm. For example, what were some of the privileges?
Some of the privileges we enjoyed when it came to campfire and some civic activities and school activities and faculty activities and so forth. We were able to do things together and voice our opinion, you know, and what we thought and so forth.
The young women, were the goals and aspirations as great for women as they were for men? Did the parents perceive their young girls as going on and being young professionals? So that was a very volatile time.
Well, I stayed along that particular time.
Especially black women.
Well, I stayed along that particular time. Being where we are and the education is low and so forth, that they relied on the knowledge of a person that knew more about it and would ask you, and they ask your opinion on what would I do about your and this or that. And even when the kids would want to go to college, well, they would always consult us. Miss Harris, do you know about a good college? Or do you think that I will succeed there? I want to go to school so bad. And so I would always give them information on what I knew. And so if I didn't really know everything that they wanted to know, and then I was giving them high thoughts. And it wasn't really too hard for the Negro child to adjust an integration thing because they were so involved themselves with the other races, you know. And it wasn't hard for them because we never had really, nothing really bad between the races after the integration. But I never forget. Mr. Harris, I was coming to his school and one morning, when he looked out of the office window, he said, he saw a little black boy, a little brown boy, and a little white boy all up there. And somebody said, now we have total integration. Look at those on black, brown, and white.
What about Kingsville today, 1989? Has it changed much?
Well, I think it's come a long way. The integration did a whole lot of things. Gave us some status we didn't have because we were given my race and the students before given positions and made advanced in things that know, they hadn't done before. Mm-hmm. And after they got educated and went to the integrated school, you do learn in the integrated school how you learn from each other, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a better picture and a better day because we have so many girls and boys that came from Negro schools mm-hmm. have just succeeded so well, are doing so good, and they need flowers. Mm-hmm.
The old story, I've heard all kinds of stories about Douglas students used to get hand-me-down books from the from the white schools. Was there any truth to that?
Yeah, the truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we used to get the hand-me-down books from the other school, the back off and different things. Yeah, at one time, a long, long time ago, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did that persist while... through the time that you were there, or?
Well, when I first began teaching, maybe around in 48, and well, when my husband came from then, they brought my 48 to my 52, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. But after then, you know, things progressed, and the elder superintendent would come and go, he had his, you know, his guidelines and his dollars and action. I don't care what the state guidelines are, your community so close. The individual really works like he like, you know.
What are the most memorable experiences that you can remember in Kingsville at the school?
Well,
anything stand out?
Well, one memorable experience I remember was because that. One year, I said, 72, we were getting ready to close. At least we were about out of closing, mm-hmm. about 3 weeks. And so that particular time, you're kind of checking your off schedule and everything. Mm-hmm. And so a group of students came for me, and I kind of observed a lot. Mm-hmm. And the supervisor brought them, and no other teacher would let them enter that room and observe but me. And so she came to my door, and she was Mrs. Harrison, I don't know what she was there, mm-hmm. and asked me if I let them come in and so forth, and she hated to take them back to the college. They hadn't seen or heard and looked at anything. And so I told her yes. And I explained to the students that school was almost at. We were off of schedule, and then they may not get to the ideas. Mm-hmm. So that's why I told them, I said, yes, we get ideas, because we aren't just looking at teaching techniques and ideas. We're looking at arrangement, neatness, schedule, discipline. And all of that to go from my teacher. Mm-hmm. And so they came in and sat down and we had some class and they would take notes, they would look at the fly on the window, they'd see how the books were stacked and check my lesson plan book and see if registered here, what was going on, just the overall picture. Mm-hmm. And when they got ready to leave, one landfill said, Mrs. Harris said, what do you attribute to your success for these years that you worked? And I said, it's my fourth thing that I always follow. And one thing is, I always have simple guidelines for my kids to follow. Mm-hmm. I accept a good quality of my work. They have to work up to their potentials. Mm-hmm. And I keep things conducive to education. I work my plan, and I plan my work. That was the thing I told him. Mm-hmm. And so the next year, Mr. Gregory and me and I wrote me a card and said, dear Mrs. Harrison, I really enjoyed observing in your room because the information that you passed on to me was priceless. Mm-hmm. I got the card, and he was a little landfill out of the valley. And so I was at Coast, I guess that was my 73. Mm-hmm. Now, Eugene, you know, do you remember me put this in? But I'm like,
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Let me ask you also, you were talking about the Hispanic students and some of the observers that would come out and observe your classes. Was there ever a time at Douglas that students were taught Spanish? We live in the Southwest, predominantly Hispanic-speaking, Spanish-speaking region. No, was that ever part of the curriculum?
Well, see, before integration, they weren't even teaching Spanish down in the elementary school. Unless it was a Spanish school thing. Mm-hmm. And so later on, they began teaching Spanish. That's first, second grade and so forth. And so when I went to the coastal elementary, which was a Spanish school, mm-hmm. I didn't speak Spanish, and they didn't speak English.
Really?
And so, but they were taught not to speak Spanish directly in school because they were trying to get away from the Spanish accent and being behind the other kids. Mm-hmm. And so we talked directly English and spoke English, and they were encouraged to speak English more. And even in the home, the parents were encouraged to try to use English so that the kid wouldn't be behind when he got to school. Mm-hmm. And that brought him, you know.
Was this in the 50s or 60s that attitude prevailed in the district?
Let me see. That went. I say the 60s because I went to culture in 66. Mm-hmm. And he was in the 50s because I went to Douglas in 52, I believe. Mm-hmm. But I said 60. Mm-hmm. I said 60. Mm-hmm.
Was that a problem? Did you have a problem with that? Did you accept the district's decision or policy not wanting the students to teach Spanish? Or?
Well, I think that was not because you had so many non-Spanish speaking people go. Mm-hmm. 75% of the population, unless you were a lad, you couldn't speak in no way. Mm-hmm. You know, not, you know, for confidence, not teaching, you know. Mm-hmm. They have a little conversation. I could, you know, speak a few Spanish words and so forth, but not to really hold them in by the conversation like in English, they didn't know unless it was Spanish. Mm-hmm. And I feel as if that was because that was the reason they hadn't done it so before, you know, taught it in the school. Mm-hmm. They had really Spanish schools, see, mm-hmm. to do the teaching and to the child. I know over in the area where I was transferred, that was typically a Latin American area. Mm-hmm. And so it was just, I guess, 10 blacks and 2 Negroes in that area. Mm-hmm. And so that was the reason that they kept it out of school, I think, a long time ago. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did black students at Douglas mix well with Hispanics students?
Douglas students went to a few white schools. Mm-hmm. I mean, Spanish were there. Mm-hmm. But the most Latin children were at the land school, mm-hmm. which were in the land area, mm-hmm. although it was a few splice divided in the Negro area and white area. Mm-hmm. But when Douglas integrated, mostly that class and so forth were Anglo. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Were the attitudes of the black students favorable?
Very favorable. Mm-hmm. They're in favor, I think. No really bad incident in among the kids, too.
What about the differences in terms of class in the community? Did the students at Douglas, those who were from upper class families, structures, make a difference in those children that were less fortunate than they?
No, among the Negroes. Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. That relationship was good and so forth. And I don't, you know, mm-hmm. that class and caste, I don't think they, you know, they proved. At least I didn't see it before. Mm-hmm.
How about the color line? Did blacks make a difference like so many Anglos did between the shade of one's skin? Were blacks into that?
I always thought that it made a little bit different, but I don't really call it essence of what it really did.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I had always thought it did.
Mm-hmm.
I always will think that.
Mm-hmm.
It does have a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Although it doesn't have to be true, but you know, what's in a person's mind and think, and old tradition that means carry on when it's not true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Was there the family structures back during the early, late 40s or early 50s? Did you find many of the families, the husband or the couples married, or were they living together? What kind of family structures existed?
Oh, I think they always had a good, stable family life.
Mm-hmm.
Because same as Jeff and Dad was out there on the railroad and so forth, their mother was really taking care of the other part, the family and the business. And Dad would come on the weekend and see if everything was slick.
Mm-hmm. Was there much substance abuse back then? We hear today drug abuse, alcohol abuse. Was that prevalent in the community?
Not then, but now probably.
Mm-hmm.
Not then, but back in the 50s and 60s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about the children? Did they, do you ever have problems with children drinking? Children experimenting with different...
not to go to where I am, here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, worldwide and citywide and statewide, we kind of have that problem with drugs everywhere now, I think, even in rural and everything. So I think it's a problem now. It's bad, worse than some, you know, than others then. But even it's gotten into elementary school and
mm-hmm. What kind of relationship did the black community have with the Navy base and military?
Well, we had a nice relationship,
mm-hmm.
because my husband gave the Negroes view to the naval base in a big address.
Mm-hmm.
They sent for him to be a Negro country and wanted to know what did the black community think, our want, our contribution and everything. At least I'm going to look at that. Some of those things left that Mr. Harris said.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to send you a lecture and then you should take him some back to me.
Mm-hmm.
He has a letter from the captain. And back to Churchill Mike, and he gave the address to have a land fella,
mm-hmm.
and a Negro fella, and a white man to give all views of Kingsley.
Mm-hmm.
What your race think, what they're doing, what they expect, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't really know in details what he gave, but it was very favorable because they wrote it. They thanked him for it.
Mm-hmm.
They said, thank you for giving the black communities view on Kingsley.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know the details.
Did the community interact much with the King Ranch? Was there much talk about it?
Well, some. Well, yes and no, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Because through the campfire bureaus, I did get to visit two or four times, so forth, and other than being little groups and so forth like that, you didn't just get an invitation to go out there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But being the campfire group, I had gone that four or five times.
Mm-hmm.
But just the individual person, then, to go to the gate and get a pass, you couldn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
But now, I guess it's more open now and everything. Because at one time you couldn't even go in a hut or anything. So Mr. Head was invited on a hunting party through the superintendent,
mm-hmm.
the Lions Club. And so you got to enjoy several privileges by being through civic organization, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked to kids and told them all about the King Ranch. So we always set it up as a mile ranch, you know, and one time it was the largest ranch in the world. So.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just been unique. The King Ranch had ranches in Australia and South America. Do you know that?
No.
Yeah. But see, the agriculture department, that used to be a requirement for the agriculture. He had to take cattle to South America.
Mm-hmm.
As part of his requirement for graduation.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they still have it left there.
In South America.
Mm-hmm. Because the Cane Ranch and ANI and all these other schools and things, look at you. The ANI, the Agriculture Department of Cane Ranch, has always been cooperative like mm-hmm. they have mm-hmm. on the Agriculture Department mm-hmm. and the cow raising and the horses and so forth. Mm-hmm. But okay. I think if they would transfer the cows to South America and the other ranch, they would get $6 credit, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Did the community accept children from mixed couples? Was it something that the community did openly? For example, a little boy or a little girl that had a black mother or white father, or black father, mm-hmm. white mother. Mm-hmm. Did the community accept them?
Well, as a whole, they didn't have too many mixed faces. Mm-hmm. But after the students got grown and went in service and so forth, they came back with wives from other races and so forth. Mm-hmm. Because you know the watch, and I think they had 3-4 missionaries in there. Mm-hmm. And then the Hodges, and seemed as if everything was fine. You know, they were acceptable with everything. Mm-hmm. And I think the color had a little bit something to do with it. Like, you know? Mm-hmm.
I would always hear adults talk when I was growing up about blacks being more acceptant of those children than whites. In other words, black society would accept a mixed baby much faster than a white person in white society.
I think that's an old kind of old tradition, mm-hmm. and I think that's true, mm-hmm. because I've always heard it. And then I have read so far that if you had 1%, like the Jewish neighborhood. Mm-hmm. I read that 100 times. Mm-hmm. And then if you got in and they were going, it's a little bit hard for that other race to accept. Mm-hmm. And I guess we just accept because you're 75% neighborhood. It's a dream. Mm-hmm. But I had always read that. Mm-hmm. Because I read some lady getting a birth certificate and it said that she had, I think, 2% Negro blood. And if you got 1%, they write it on your birth certificate, Negro. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've covered this morning a whole spectrum of subject matter. Let me ask you, is there anything, because once you go back to Longview, this tape will go into the library and into the museum and become part of history, the history of Kingsville and the black community. Is there anything that you would like for Kingsvillians or Texans or the country to know about your years, your husband's years here in Kingsville that maybe they don't know about?
Well, I would really like for them to remember us as having inspired many a child on the road to success mm-hmm. and progress by our patience, our love, our understanding, the help of the community, the love of God, and the push that we gave them in life. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll remember that. Mm-hmm. And we just have to have been a part of the success of the kids and so forth, because we see so many of them doing good and going to Hollywood and Japan and living mm-hmm. elsewhere and doing so well. Mm-hmm. And we just feel good about it.
Was religion, was the church, an intricate part of the family structure in Kingsville during that time?
Well, in the black community, I think the church really played a vital part in a Negro child's lifestyle. Most of them really put the church above everything else. Well, it shouldn't be, you know, because the three agencies is the home, the school, and the church. And I think it really helped a whole lot in the child being adjusted and successful, because we had to take the church along with them.
Did many of the families have superstitious beliefs? Were there ever any signs in the school that, from the children, that families believed in any type of folklore?
No, you know, it went long in the 60s and the 50s, I hope you could have devotion and prayer and so forth. And later on, you know, they tried to cut out prayer in public school. But if you had kids that wanted to pray, they could pray silent and so forth like that. But I always opened up, I was in prayer and devotion. And as they passed that in, you know, in Congress and so forth, we still had a little prayer, you know, they think we always put it in the guidelines. Because when it came to individual room and so forth, I was superintendent, I was instilled with us that that's your room. And we hired you because we believe you were capable of managing and making things successful and work, because we really don't know what goes on. That was always kept in mind. This is my room, my home, my kids, my family, and the success all depend on me. And so I tried to do my best.
In South Texas, we know that in Hispanic culture, there's a lot of folk medicine being practiced historically as well as currently. Did white families have any home remedies that might have been carryovers from slavery days in terms of treating headaches, stomach aches, fevers, those kinds of things?
I don't know, just I would say yes, they had some things to carry over from slavery and so forth, herbs and plants that you use for medicine and food and stuff. I say yes, because I remember in particular, I believe it's for Oliveris plant and a calacho that's supposed to be good for burns and cuts and stains and so forth. It's something like a pepper. Yeah, they have peppers.
And did you see that used a lot here?
Yes, I did. And so I took one along. I had seen it really used and perfected. Because I remember Miss Miles Hill got burned. And she fell in some hot grease. And she had a great big olive arrow spray. And she just put it all over her back. And it didn't leave no skin. I mean, she didn't even have to go to the doctor. It's a little bit.
Really?
And it was another plant for tuberculosis. I believe that's the same plant that's supposed to be good for diabetes. Because this, always tell me, Irene, I'm going to send your mother olive oil, and she had diabetes. And she told me to make her tea and drink this, and she won't have to take it off.
Really? And that aloe vera plant would control the diabetes?
Yes, for diabetes. Still didn't get a whole lot of things. Have you seen one?
Yes.
And
yes,
it's okay. Got something like a cucumber hanging there. Should be good for your skin and so forth.
Does, in the case of this individual that you know, has it controlled the diabetes?
Well, I don't, to a great extent, I don't believe it. Because I don't think anything will really control diabetes but medication. If you want to take that along, so forth, so well and good, it's not going to hurt you. But my mother lived on the trailer of them homeless and so forth. Mm-hmm. Just like Peachtree Lee, they came. Peachtree Lee's teeth, door, mm-hmm. will control the sugar. My brother has a mild case of diabetes, so I want to talk about his Peachtree Lee, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so he has had it 2 years, and he's been boiling Peachtree Lee's and drinking the tea.
Mm-hmm.
And so 2 months ago, the doctor put him on Diamondese, which was proof they weren't doing no good. It's an ism.
Mm-hmm.
These two mentioned ears on the way out
now. Okay. Okay. Let's... Okay. I had started to ask there before the tape ran out. A couple more questions. When Kingsville... when the rest of the country, I should say, was moving through segregation, desegregation, the civil rights movement, there was violence felt all up and down the U.S., north to south. Were there any repercussions? Were there any obvious signs of that in Kingsville?
Well, I said hotels and motels and eating establishments. And, you know, it was segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And the buses, you know, segregated.
Mm-hmm.
And now fly in because, you know, you couldn't just really walk up and get any job the morning in a particular time. Even if you were qualified, it was a little bit segregated, I think.
Mm-hmm.
On my qualification for job.
Mm-hmm.
You had to go to the back of the bus and go in the back door and eat. Now, there was, when Mr. Harris came, the game was segregated, and I.
The game?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He told me that. I know after he came here in Longview, in the hospital, the urologist that came in to administer him was from the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And when he found out Sam was from Kingsville, he got interested. Said, Sam, I remember when we used to poke out of here through the door and try to see the NIT in you.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned that to him 7 years ago,
really?
How they wanted to go in the day and buy a ticket like the other and couldn't.
Mm-hmm. This is for football. Football games?
Football games, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My husband's a football fan because we was on a football scholarship in school.
Mm-hmm.
Used to play a little sandlot football. Had a football team at Douglas, and that was his life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Was Martin Luther King a hero to blacks? You were still teaching at Douglas at the time of his assassination.
Yes, I believe. I was in the hospital when King was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
It was 68. Mm-hmm. 1968.
68?
Uh-huh. I was in the hospital, because I remember I was in the hospital in 1968 when King was assassinated. In Memphis, in Memphis.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Memphis, in Memphis.
Was there a solemn mood in the community, in the school, once you got back after your hospital stay?
Well, to a great extent, it was so, it did show some effects because sometimes if you are not too involved, I don't know too much about anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't have too much effect on that as the teacher would know and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And the child wouldn't. If you more knowledge you knew about it, even your individual, then more information would be. Well, one teacher wouldn't even mention it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe another teacher cried on it.
Mm-hmm.
He was good. He had some involvement, I believe, in some different things.
How was the mood when President Kennedy was assassinated? Was there any different? Was it different? Did blacks react any different?
I think everybody cried. Did. Mm-hmm. I never forget. We were on our way home from lunch, my husband and I. And they got on the news before it got on that he had been shot. And so before we could get back to school, he came in and ate lunch. And I think between 12 and 1 o'clock, the Roman Catholic priest administered the life like she died. They could. But it was a sad news to everybody. I think it was called the black community and other community. And everybody just really knew more about the president and government and what they would do for the poor and the underprivileged and everybody. In later years, whereas before they didn't even know what their name. I think it had a great effect on them.
So there was a real difference in terms of the two deaths. There appeared to be a little more emotional ness on the part of President Kennedy's assassination,
it was really a different emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Now he was one of us.
Mm-hmm.
And he advocated nonviolence, and he tried to get things integrated and progress and going and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so touching.
Mm-hmm.
To be one of us, although President Kennedy was also, but it came in from a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
Because you never known a president to be so interested in the minorities or the poor, coming up with a different social program and everything. This was a continuation of President Roosevelt thing that he had started.
Mm-hmm.
Even, I think, the Negro got a step forward and moved up when they started to see hands, the NYA, the WPA, and all of those social programs and so forth. Roosevelt, the Truman, and every president was just a stepping stone, and then every president would add his bit. And back, President Kennedy was so intelligent, so rich, and so understanding. So it was just they knew more about him than President. He was so down to earth and common. And look back to me, he was just so approachable and playing this way. That's what I feel. There's something about it a little bit.
Okay. Mrs. Harris, I am, again, very appreciative for the time that you've taken here today.
I really enjoyed this. I'm going to go back and tell you this.
Great.
And I want one of those tapes.
Okay. Right? All right.
Even if I had advice, let me know how much you have.
Okay. All righty. I will make you a copy. Matter of fact, when I send back the copy of your pictures,
you don't have to be in the early swing. You'll get to me everything. Just took me some of the envelope and send me some of everything.
Okay.
Because I like to read it and show it and talk about everything.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And thank you. It's a pleasure.